874 to order.
And it's essentially my intention. Most of the bill is not controversial. So my intention is to really focus on the areas that we might need public testimony and conversation between the conferees. So, which are really, it's my understanding, Section 15, Section 16, and then the appropriations portions of the bill. So I guess what I'd like to do at this time is maybe walk through. The only problem we have is that we don't have either counsel.
They went to go get a candy bar or something.
Okay, well, we have hungry counsel. So maybe while we're waiting for them, why don't we take some testimony then on sections 15 and 16, and then we'll move on to some conversations and maybe walk through an overview of the different portions of the bill and the definitions as soon as both counsel get to the committee hearing. Does that suit everybody, Representative Hilty?
Somewhat unsure about your references to sections. Could you refer us to pages on the side by side?
Thank you, Representative Hilty. R5 and R6, Section 15 would start on R5.
On the Senate side.
On the Senate side. Section 4 on the House side. And it runs through, R7 on the Senate side. And R6 on the House side. And then, Representative Hilty, the appropriations section would be the other part that I assume that we'll need to spend a great deal of time on in this committee, talking about the different ways to appropriate the federal funds. So with that, is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify on Section 15? We're kind of jumping out of order again because we don't have the council sitting here, but if anybody wishes to testify on Senate Section 15, House Section 4, please step forward. Okay, if anybody wishes to...
Just wait. Let them come up.
Okay, one test on 15.
Oh, nobody on 15?
Why don't we take Section 16 in the Senate side, Section, essentially it would be Section 2 on the House side of R6. If anybody would like to testify in Section 16, we would take your testimony at this time.
Yeah.
Mr. Black, just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bert Black. I'm business and legal analyst with the Office of the Secretary of State. And we have the office would like to comment on the contract issues. There are a number of different provisions in clause, subdivision 1 clause A. And there are also a couple of points in clause 1B, subdivision 1B. With respect to 1A, The Secretary of State's office would like to work with the Commissioner of Administration. We would suggest language such as with the assistance of the Commissioner of Administration. We do have a comment on the questions of the perpetual license. Obviously, that's generally a good thing with software contracts, but this is mandatory, and that may be a condition of the bid process. I mean, we are at the point where we need to have bids, and if that is going to be a problem for the vendors, the mandatory nature of that may need to be considered. Similarly, there was a similar provision on the escrow, but it appears that that is an industry. The industry is coming to that. With respect to fifth sentence, there's a provision here about IRV. That has been a concern of the office throughout the year. So let me see, just express that. Finally, there's a provision that the last sentence, 7.14 and 15, asks that the contracts must be renewed no later than July 1st of each odd-numbered year, and it occurs to us that we may want either, if the technology moves, to do it sooner, or if the technology doesn't move, later. And we would suggest that the important thing is that there always be a contract in force, contract or contracts in force, and that they be reviewed and renewed from time to time. With respect to Clause B, 2 points. We would appreciate, we like the advisory committee structure, except that we'd like to not have it be limited to auditors, municipal clerks with experience, and members of the disabilities committee. There may be others who can contribute, so we suggest that perhaps that a change be made to include representatives of those groups, but not certainly not limited to them. And finally, the language on 7.22 and 7.23 requires the open appointments process, and it just occurs to us that we may have some time issues with respect to that, and so we would ask for the deletion of the sentence on starting on 7.22 so that we can move right along with the advisory committee. So those are our comments on Section 16, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Are there any questions for Ms. Black?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Black, in Clause B, if I'm reading this correctly, what it says is that the Secretary of State will appoint people whose function it is to assist the Commissioner of the Department of Administration in reviewing the merits of his proposals. Is that really what's intended here?
Madam Chair, along with my, this sort of goes, I guess, with, and thank you, Representative Hilty, this goes with my comment in the first sentence that we want to work with the assistance of the Commissioner of Administration, but we would like to have the lead role. If, in fact, you should provide us with that authority, then I suppose there would be a change necessary to say that the advisory committee assists the Secretary of State in the Secretary. I suppose there'd have to be some language to keep the advice coming to the Commissioner of Administration too, since we'll be working with them. But That would require a slight change.
And Madam Chair,
Representative
Mr. Black, was the intention here in referring to the Commissioner of Administration to have the representative of the commissioner of the Department of Administration be the chief information officer, or what is contemplated?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty.
If I can interrupt you, yes. Mr. Black, what I'm asking, I guess, is since the Office of Technology, or as it's about to become the Office of Enterprise Technology, has been an agency inside the Department of Administration, was it anticipated that this would be in consultation with the Office of Technology, or what function exactly was the Department of Administration going to perform? Was this in its function of reviewing contracts, or what's going on?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, I think I understand your question now. And actually, we kind of like the House language, but with respect to the Senate language, I think that was the assistance of the Commissioner of Administration is more on the procurement side than the CIO or enterprise technology side, at least as we contemplated it. We have been working, doing some work ahead with the materials management folks and Mr. Stembler from Paul Stembler from the Department of Administration. They have a lot of experience in purchasing. They have a lot of experience in purchasing in bulk, and they even have nationwide bulk discount purchasing experience, which we thought might help us get a better price. And so we met with. I think we've been in this process in communication with Mr. Stembler and that side of Department of Administration for probably a year. I don't know that we've contacted the CIO for this purpose at all.
I understand what you're...
Well, Mr. Black, in your view, you said you liked the House language, but if you look at the Senate language, on 7.19, would it help you, or what's your view if you added something in essentially identifying to assist in the review of the merits of the proposal? Would that help your viewpoint on those those lines in regards to the Commissioner of Administration?
Madam Chair, do you mean that the Commissioner would assist in reviewing?
Senator Higgins, maybe what you can do, if you wouldn't mind, give us some rationale for where the Senate was coming from, in addition to what Mr. Black had said, and maybe we could piece through this one.
The thought behind having an advisory committee is advisory. The people who we listed here as people who should be part of that committee have particular expertise in the use of electronic voting systems. So, you know, we all know that the cities and counties are actually administering the elections. And about the time that I began to think I really know something about elections, then I talked to those folks and I realized how much I don't still yet know about elections and how all the equipment works together. I think it's really important to have the members of the disability community there to talk about their particular needs with the equipment. And they no doubt will come up with things that nobody else has thought of as reasons to accept or reject the proposals that they would be looking at. I think this is a really critical piece. I think the CIO might be a really good addition into here as well. But I think that this is a really good piece and a good government piece. I think that we're going to spend $39 million on this, and I think getting all the people who have something to offer at the table to help make the decision is a really good one.
And Madam Chair, in the same process where we've been working with the procurement folks, we've also been at a group of persons
with disabilities from a broad spectrum, including Margot Rimdeck from the Council on Disability and the people that she's helped recruit involved in that. They have come forth with features that they feel are necessary. So I think that's absolutely true that the people who are going to use this certainly know what they need.
Madam Chair, Alberto Cantal, Chief Deputy Secretary of State. If paragraph B means what I think it means, and that is, generally when we have a request for proposal, we put together a scoring committee that reviews those proposals and scores them. And so we have been in discussion with members of the disability community to have representatives from that community on a scoring committee. In addition, we would have the folks that are here, county auditors, municipal clerks. So is that what this means, to review and evaluate? Then it fits in with our contemplation of having a scoring committee composed of these individuals. In addition, we do not want to limit it to this group listed here, but also have individuals like Representative Hilton indicated, some folks that might have particular computer skills and particular technical skills in voting equipment. So we'd like to have at least have that opportunity to get that expertise on evaluating the proposals.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Black or Mr. Kintola? Mr. Black, I'd like to keep you there for a moment. Still on Section 16, can you you mentioned in your comments that you had some concerns, or the office had some concerns with IRV. Could you expand on that statement a little bit?
Madam Chair, you've asked me that question, but I am not the... I can tell you that the office position is not in favor of rank voting, but I am not the policy expert in that area. But perhaps Mr. Kilkuski should speak on that.
Mr. Kilkuski, please come forward, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tony Kilkuski, Deputy Secretary of State for Elections. I think the concern that we have as an office is that we have not officially taken a position up to this point dealing with the notion of ranked voting anywhere in the legislature. It's been up for discussion and hasn't passed any committee. However, by putting it into statute and putting it into law, we are de facto saying that this is a possibility that's there. And so it's making a position that this is something that I think is, and that's part of the reason that we're taking a look at this issue, to take a look at our objections based on the fact that now it's sitting there, and in some ways it makes a statement that that's kind of what we're looking to do.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins.
I was just clearing
myself. Oh, okay. Mr. Kilkuski, then, from a policy standpoint, in terms of making sure that people are educated in terms of the votes that they're casting, does IRB encourage that type of balloting?
Madam Chair, could you please state that again, because I saw in part of it, but I didn't follow the last part.
You know, Mr. Kilkuski, I guess what I'm really wondering is the office has not taken a firm position on IRV, but is obviously expressing some concerns over IRV, and I'm wondering the basis of the concerns. Maybe I'll just stop there and ask that question.
That's a very good question, Madam Chair. And members, when you take a look at rank voting, instant runoff voting, however you look at that, it does change the whole complexity on how we go to the polls and how we vote. And it's one of those that really needs a policy debate, I really firmly believe, in my estimation, in terms of how we select our position in the history of elections. As you're one person, you have one vote for one individual that you're choosing. This changes that whole concept, because now you're not only doing a first choice, in many cases you're doing a second choice, sometimes a third choice or a fourth choice. And the outcomes of those elections can vary from place to place. And so I think it needs a full debate when we take a look at how we're going to come down to this position to get there on that issue. Secondly, there's been some concerns raised to me from members looking at how this would affect them and their races. If this spreads out, you know, to get to a state representative race or a state senate race, in terms of how that selection process could be carried on into a primary, for example, so there's some concerns there, because they're not exactly sure completely how that would work and how that would affect their campaigning. You know, so you can campaign to be a second choice, or you campaign to be a first choice, or to campaign to be a third choice, and how that has some influences. And the position that we have here tonight is that this kind of says that this is kind of a direction that we're going at, when I don't think we've had taken a stance on that in the legislature in terms of having the full idea of being passed on and passing out of the House committees. I believe, I'm not sure if the Senate passed this out last year or not.
It has not passed on the floor. I don't know if we've ever gotten it out of committee. I don't remember. I believe we have.
We've had, Madam Chair.
Senator Clay.
I know we've had the actual policy. We've had that discussion on the floor, I think, at least twice, if not three times. And that I know it's been defeated in the Senate on the floor. We've had the policy discussion in fact, this year was defeated on the floor. But we've had the policy discussion in committee, I believe, at least twice this year, because I believe that it was a standalone bill, a couple of instances. We've had a discussion on the Senate floor on a different language than this, on basically just the machines themselves and having them be able to do that. This is quite different than we've had before. I don't think we've ever had a discussion either in committee or policy, at least, to the negative anyway, on the floor on this type of language. We have had something different when it was actually required the software and the machines to have that instant run out. This is a little different language. But the policy, you're right, we've had that discussion and it's been defeated in the Senate.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Clace, last year I carried a bill 2 years ago, last year, that would allow local governments, allow cities, municipalities to do this. And it did pass out of committee, and actually it was going to pass out of the floor, and I think it was before passed it on the floor that we took it down to one city's election, because the House author thought he had sort of a commitment he could get it through with a one-city pilot project. But I know we did pass that in the Senate. We changed it to one city before it came up on the floor, and it was adopted there. It was just defeated in the House.
Senator Higgins.
And just to, so that everybody knows who might not have a copy of this, this does not authorize the use of IRV. This just says that at the time at which this body would authorize it, whoever the vendor of the machinery is has to give us the software to make it work. And I know that I talked to several groups who had always been opposed to IRV, and they're still opposed to IRV, but this was soft enough that it wasn't giving permission to do that. And once again, we're going to spend $39 million on this equipment, and one would hope that if we decide as a group of policymakers to at some point go to that direction, that we can just get the upgrade that makes this machinery still usable and not throw it out the window because we can't use it.
Madam Chair?
I think it's an important piece.
Mr. Kulikowski, what would, in a contract that had some that type of language requiring additional software, how would that affect a contract and cost? Or?
Mr. Kulikowski?
Madam Chair, and Senator Clyde, this is a good question. I'm really not sure yet. You have to talk to a vendor and figure out what they have to do with any kind of firmware that's also part of the software to allow the software package to be part of the, of what their machine does. And I haven't really asked them that question. If they're going to have to do anything else to get the machine ready to accept software, I'm not sure. Not every application of software is conducive with every institution of firmware that's out there when you take a look at the processes. But I haven't asked any vendor that question at this point. I don't know if that came up in testimony in the Senate when you were looking at this issue or not.
Madam Chair, I didn't think this aspect, at least with this language, was controversial, but we didn't have, a full discussion. But I don't. The question I would have, would it preclude a contract with a vendor with this type of, would it be difficult to do? That's the question I have. It would be something that a vendor may not be able to do this without the actual hardware.
I'm sure if I could yield to Mr. Quintella.
Mr. Quintella?
Sir, we are not aware of any vendor at this point, at least with the equipment that we're looking at, that has this type of programming currently in the system. And we don't know what it would take and what time and how long it would take for them to modify current programming and current equipment. The timeline of this is pretty short. We probably will be issuing a request for proposal and processing those requests and issuing then the authority to purchase within 30 to 45 days from today. So any modification of any programming would have to take place pretty quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Quintella, I don't know how you're going to have a purchase agreement 30 to 45 days. There is currently no equipment that is HAVA compliant, period, of any kind. So I don't think you're going to be buying anything until after the Federal Elections Commission decides what equipment we're going to be able to be allowed to use.
Madam Chair.
That'll be ready January.
Senator Higgins, we still have to work to get an RFP out. There's a difference between getting an RFP out and looking for bids. That's right. And, but we still have to get an RFP out within 30 to 45 days to begin the process. And we also have to take a look after that process at certification once people would come in with that equipment. But when you put together an RFP, part of the RFP is taking a look at some of the things that we need to require. Now, when we put the contract out, there are certain things we know that that system is going to have to do because of what our statutes ask us to do. And so part of it's letting the vendors respond back on that RFP. Now, what the standards are going to be coming from the EAC, you know, they've been promising us those for a number of years. And one of the things that we are asking for in this bill and we have talked about is language that would give us some freedom to move forward once those RFPs come back and we take a look at setting up the standards for certification if they delay those so that we can make selections off of the RFP to go forward. And so that's part of the process of normal contracting as you go down the line in this process. So we do have to move relatively quickly to get the RFP out there to start the process and looking and letting the vendors across the country and all vendors that can meet what we have in our as a description within our bill to go forward.
Senator Higgins.
We have two of the experts of the IRB in the entire city. Right here, and I'm wondering if
right.
You can hear from them.
We sure can, but Senator Higgins, I kind of, what I'd like to do real quickly, since Mr. Watson is here, I'd like to do a quick overview of the bill, and then we'll wrap back to this section. But after the quick overview, I'd like to take a 10-minute recess. Our people are coming from all sorts of different directions. I think that it's very fair to give both sides an opportunity to just kind of converse together, and then we'll come back and hear from the folks who'd like to testify on the IRV. So, Mr. Watson, I know... or maybe even Ms. McDyde, if you guys, why don't we start with that? I turn to you because you gave a nice overview earlier. So, Mrs. McKnight, if you'd like to give a quick overview of the bill. Just roughly of the different sections, just 1 through 10 is relating to definitions, XYZ. Very quick overview.
Sure. Yes, Madam Chair, the first section 1 of the bill is substantive restatement of value different. As you say, the first section is down to Section 9 in the Senate, 67 in the House are definitions, and there are differences in most of those. At least at a language level, not actually. The then we get into manual marketing definitions. That's another definition that's identical. There's some identical provisions on R3. Examination report by Secretary of State is identical. Voting system for disabled voters is identical. There's a provision on the House side at the bottom of R3. Election assistance commitment standards. That is. At this time only in the House bill, dealing with what will happen if the Federal Election Assistance Commission hasn't established standards by January 1st of 2006. At the top of R4, there's a section dealing with municipalities, which, this is some more language about applying to federal and state. This is language you've all seen before. HAVA compliance systems being needed in state and federal elections after December 31st, 2005, and the local elections after December 31st, 2007. Continuing on that page, order of candidates is identical language in both bills. Alternation is that section. It's similar but not identical, and it's another one of these areas where there may be some language changes recommended because of discussions among staff and most local officials that you'll hear about when you're at that micro level. The top of page R5. This is a House-only provision that currently voters get 3 minutes inside the voting booth. This would make that, instead of that being the ceiling, that would become the floor, so the voters would get at least 3 minutes, and that is, I guess, reflecting the complexity that's expected with some of the new equipment. Continuing on R5, there's a House-only provision about co-location of precincts when some jurisdictions are sharing equipment. That you will probably want to get into some detail on later. Then we have an amendment to the electronic voting system section, and there are some, again, language differences that I'm sure you'll be talking about in detail later. Then we get into the state voting systems contract, and there are many differences there that I think you'll probably want to get into. Continuing with an R7, the House Section 83 and the Senate Section 17 both deal with experimental use of electronic voting systems, and the difference there is that the House struck paragraph B, which deals with authorizing direct recording electronic systems, and the Senate did some terminology amendments, and again, that's something you probably want to discuss later. Continuing on R5, the amendment to the House Section 84 and Senate Section 18 are identical. On page R8, Section 85 is a House-only provision, and that goes with the language that you saw on the previous page allowing co-location of precincts specifically in non-contiguous jurisdictions. And this is a reference that an amendment that inserts a reference to that option. If you were to adopt that earlier section, you would want this as a technical amendment. Continuing on R8, testing of voting systems, there are language differences here, and again, some issues that staff and local officials have talked about doing further amendments with. On R9, Section 87, the House, Section 20 in the Senate, instruction of judges and voters is identical in both bodies. Continuing with Section 88 in the House and 21 in the Senate, those are identical. And further, Section 89 and Section 22 are identical. At the top of R10, the House first had a provision on permitted and prohibited modes of transfer. This is basically the concern of hacking in the case of electronic transmittal of votes. The Senate adopted a floor amendment to this effect, which you see with some language differences that address some concerns raised by Kevin County.
Madam Chair, if I could interrupt for a moment.
Representative Hilty.
I just wanted to point out that the Senate language, I think, is the agreed-upon language there that sort of supersedes the an earlier version that was proposed by Hennepin County and incorporated in the House bill, but then they came back and tweaked it a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Hilty.
Madam Chair, members, continuing on R10, there's a Section 91 in the House, which is not found in the Senate. This is a technical amendment to the section in Minnesota Statutes 206.85 deals with electronic voting systems being used at a counting center, and this is just it inserts counting center as a kind of clarification, but the section already deals with that issue. There's no substantive change there. Continuing in R11, Section 92 in the House, Section 24 in the Senate are identical. Oh, Section 93 in the House is a provision that in discussions at a staff level and with some local officials, at least at that time, nobody knew why this was in the House bill. So if the Secretary of State has more advice, then you'll want to hear that, but there may be no need for that. Nobody can remember the reason for it, at least the latest information that I have.
I will note for the record that the Senate is taking some joy in that statement. Ms. McKnight. No.
No, continuing on, Section 94 in the House, Section 25 in the Senate, those are identical. Section 95 in the House, Section 26 in the Senate are identical. Continuing on, Article 12, Section 96 in the House, Section 27 in the Senate are identical, and this will be another place where there will probably be some recommended language change, even though they're identical. Section 97 in the House, Section 28 in the Senate are identical, and then we get into the appropriations languages, which is has many money differences and some. Just a couple of things I can point out to you on R12 on the House side, line 4.23, there's a reference that we don't need there that we'll recommend that you take out to section 206.57.5. That would just be technical. Moving along to R13 on the House side, starting at 4.36, there's a substantive issue for your discussion later that requires that unused funds be set aside in a segregated account for future purchases of voting equipment, complying with that. Going on to the subdivision 2 in both bills, optical scan equipment. One difference of note is, and it's of important note, on the Senate side, the sentence is appropriations available until June 30th, 2009. That or some date that like that, whatever date you might choose, you need, because without it, any appropriation that you might enact in this bill will disappear on June 30th of this year, and we know you don't want to do that. So something like the Senate language that starts at 15.25. And the same issue appears at 16.3 on the Senate side. Whether you use 2009 or some other year, obviously, it's your policy choice, but you need a sentence like that. Continuing on R13, there's a report that counties must make to the Secretary of State in 2006 on the amount that they spend for the purchase of each kind of electronic voting system, and the difference there is the date. The House is giving the people more time to prepare this. The House dates are March 15th to the Secretary of State, and then the 15th to the legislature, and the Senate wants it earlier on January 15th and February 15th, respectively. Let's see, at the bottom of R13, federal funds for access by disabled individuals. The Senate approach is to appropriate money. The House is to state that the Secretary may apply for this money and that no further appropriation is needed. On the Senate side, you see appropriations to the Commissioner of Administration and to the Secretary of State to establish this state voting systems contract. Again, on the House side, beginning at 5.31, you can see another money difference. Then the House has a House-only provision. There's a House-only provision, I'm sorry, about surplus voting equipment has to be made available. This is requiring a county or municipality that gets new voting system equipment under this section. Equipment that's being replaced by the new equipment, it's supposed to give it away for free, so to speak, to other local units of government rather than selling it. And the Secretary of State is required to establish a website, a page on its website, where counties can post what information, the specifications of the equipment that they have available. And then the local equipment plans, I think, are identical, except maybe some paragraphing differences. But I think the substance of the local equipment plans are very identical.
The Senate put the school districts in there.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. That was a four amendment, and yes, my thinking wasn't caught up with four amendments. When I made my notes, And then you can see similar language on the two bodies about what counties must do to apply for grants. And I would say there that would be language differences. There's a Senate-only provision meaning that this act does nothing to preclude the use of mail balloting precincts where it's allowed under state law. And the two bills have identical effective dates, that is to say they're immediate.
Thank you, Mr. Knight. I will, I think we will stand in recess for about 10 minutes. If you are here and would like to give public testimony, if you could bring your name, bring yourself forward and give your name to our committee administrator so that we can actually go down a list and actually indicate what section you're interested in testifying on. That way we'll make sure that everybody gets included in the process and has the ample opportunity to testify in those sections and do it in a way that actually makes sense and kind of gets us through in a coordinated fashion here tonight. So with that, we'll stand in recess for 10 minutes. Thanks. We'll call the conference committee back to order and pick up where we left off. And Mr. Kennedy, do you and Mr. Solgaard want to come forward and comment regarding the IRB? Could you state your name for the record?
Bruce Kennedy. I don't see Representative Ember here. Is he going to be here in a second?
He will be here shortly.
Okay, because he's one of the people I have to convince, so I would hope he's here.
Is it okay if we just wait until everybody's here?
Could you state your name for the record?
Sure. I'm Tony Solgaard.
Why don't you start out by, I do know that Representative Emmer is a quick study.
Well, my name's Bruce Kennedy. I'm an attorney and I guess you could say a self-appointed lobbyist for blank voting, but in conjunction with Fair Vote Minnesota. And Tony here is the president of Fair Vote Minnesota, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization basically dedicated to improving our elections. I'm here to testify on behalf of maintaining the sentence that is in the Senate bill with respect to ranked order voting. This sentence, should it remain in the bill, has the potential of saving hundreds of thousands of dollars, ultimately over time millions of dollars for Minnesota taxpayers. And by the same token, if this sentence is removed, that could cost our taxpayers over time millions of dollars. There's two issues involved with this sentence. Number one, this voting equipment that we're going to purchase is going to last a long time. It could last 10, 12, 15 years. It's not unheard of for voting equipment to last. It's important to have voting equipment that has the capability of doing the things that the citizens of Minnesota may want it to do. The other issue is to give the state and the counties and localities more bargaining power to purchase the voting equipment well equipped. And it's simply a fact when you're dealing with voting equipment vendors, if they are competing for a contract, then they're going to offer more favorable terms than if they already have sold you the equipment and then you want to upgrade it later. So it certainly would be possible to upgrade the equipment later if we don't have this capability, but it would be extremely costly, maybe to the point where it wouldn't even be worth doing. Ranked voting looked at from the partisan perspective or the nonpartisan election perspective. Looking at it from partisan election perspective, the goal is majority rule. There is no way we are going to enact instant runoff voting or ranked voting in partisan elections without huge consensus among many groups of people. It has a significant impact on political parties and elections. And, you know, it wouldn't simply happen just because this clause is put into the legislation. On the other hand, using ranked voting in nonpartisan elections is almost a no-brainer, or allowing cities, school districts, or other entities to be able to use it if they want to, makes complete sense. And this is where all the savings I'm talking about can come in. It costs approximately $50,000 for a city to conduct a primary election. You can have a same or better democratic result by having ranked voting in one election. Cities should have the option to be able to do this. This having the voting equipment capacity is what would enable them to choose that. In the case of school districts, Senator Kleiss authored a bill a couple years ago requiring school districts to have a primary if they have more than two candidates for any one position. I laud that goal. I think majority rule is extremely important. However, it can be costly for the school districts to conduct a primary. And in some instances, for example, the school district of Belle Plaine in the year 2003 had seven candidates for three positions. If the law had been in effect in 2003, they would have had to conduct a primary to eliminate only one candidate, to bring it down to six candidates for three positions. Now, I believe the school district of Belle Plaine can spend their money more wisely, the $50,000, on part-time employees, or on programs, or on bats and balls, or whatever, than to have a primary to eliminate just one person. Why not give that school district the option of having the voters rank their choices in one election? You'll have a better turnout, you'll have a better result, and you'll save money. And it's, like I say, it's an option that should be there. But the difficult part of ranked voting is the counting. It's not the voting itself. Voters in Ireland, Australia, other places have been voting like this for decades. There's never any issue with spoiled ballots with ranked voting. The problem is in the counting of the votes. That's where it gets somewhat complex. So having equipment do that is what gives the school districts and the cities the courage to give this a try. Tony has some comments too.
Okay, sure, thanks. Once again, my name is Tony Solgard. I'm the president of Fair Vote Minnesota. And I think Bruce closed with the example of Ireland and Australia. I think it's important to point out that there are other jurisdictions that have used this successfully for many, many years. And we've also, it seems that this issue has taken on a kind of a partisan tinge, that there's a, that this is somehow a something that the Democrats are for and Republicans are supposed to be against. I challenge that. We've had national leadership on this issue from Senator John McCain, for example, the Republican Party in Alaska and in Utah have been supportive of instant runoff voting. Here in Minnesota, Congressman Mark Kennedy has spoken publicly in favor of considering alternative voting methods. Congressman John Klein had one election that was spoiled by a third-party candidate, and 2 years later, his opponent sponsored a manufactured spoiler candidate, which wasn't successful, but which points out that that our system is vulnerable to that kind of manipulation, something that instant runoff voting could safeguard our elections. And this language that's in this bill was proposed in the State Government Budget Division. And I think it's relevant to note here that that it had unanimous support from the Republican members of that committee. Well, there is developing interest around the state in what we're talking about here. Resolutions have been passed by city councils in Minneapolis, Duluth, Roseville, Hopkins, and the Ramsey County Board. Most of these are calling for ranked choice capability to be available in the voting equipment. There's active interest in other cities as well. And specifically on this issue, I think it's important to note that when the state Help America Vote Act plan was submitted for public comments, 52% of the public comments received on that plan called for ranked ballot capability for our voting equipment. Well, the objections from the Secretary of State's office were that we need to have a policy debate on instant runoff voting, and I couldn't agree more. This is not about putting the cart before the horse. It's about keeping our options open so that we actually can have that policy debate, not clouded by cost issues. We need to keep our options open for Buffalo, for Le Sueur, for St. Cloud, if they choose to use instant runoff voting for their city elections in coming years. They could obtain this equipment in two ways. They could obtain it under a statewide buying contract that covered their purchase. The Secretary of State's office has testified that their statewide buying contract can reduce the price by two-thirds over what a county would face going out on its own. Or it can retrofit that equipment after the equipment is already in place. And has already been suggested that's going to be a much more expensive option. Well, the second objection from the Secretary of State's office is that no vendors are currently offering this capability that they're aware of. The rest of the story is that the Federal Elections Commission voting system standards have been developing and been revised, and they now include a requirement that an equipment vendor state in its technical specifications whether or not it offers this capability. And Minnesota's two vendors, Diebold and ESNS, have developed this capacity for other jurisdictions that they serve. These are Minnesota's two vendors. They've developed this for other jurisdictions. And ESNS has told the Minneapolis Elections Director that in fact it's developing this capacity as a standard provision, a standard capability for its next generation of scanners, which will be purchased with its Help America Vote Act funds. So you know, there we have it, straight from one of our vendors, that this is a capacity that will be offered in the short term, in the near term. So in summary, this is about keeping our options open and so that we can have that policy debate and not have the debate clouded by cost issues. Oh, the equipment can't handle it. It would cost too much to retrofit the equipment. And one last thing I should note is that this technology can have an immediate application to improve the security of our elections. In District 27 in 2002, there was an election that ended up being decided by the Supreme Court because there were a couple dozen ballots that were burned in a fireplace. If this technology were in place, there would have been an electronic backup copy of each ballot, and that election could have been decided by the voters rather than the Supreme Court. So this technology has an immediate application. It's not just something that's out in the future. That's what I came to say.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for either Mr. Solgaard or Mr. Kennedy? Yes, Senator Hinton.
Mr. Solgaard, aren't there cities in California and other places who do their municipal elections with IRB?
There are about a half a dozen cities and counties in California that have either implemented it or are in the process of implementing it. Other Washington State has also approved this for some of its cities. It's making progress around the country. Louisiana already uses instant runoff voting for its overseas absentee ballots. Arkansas just approved it for its overseas military absentee ballots. The state of Vermont has approved it for the city of Burlington. It's making progress around the country.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Hilty?
Mr. Stolgard, you mentioned the SNS contemplating or offering this capability. Do you know whether there's an additional cost for this in their equipment?
Well, Representative Hilty, if we were to ask the question, what does it cost to provide overvote protection or undervote protection, what would the answer be? And we don't know the answer to that because the vendors don't break out that cost in that way. Cost is negotiated between the vendor and the purchaser, and that's one of the reasons why it's urgent to do this now, because of the statewide purchasing contract. If we can include this in the statewide purchasing contract, the ability to bring the cost down, if there is any, is a significant reason for why we're here. I wouldn't even be here today if it wasn't for that.
Madam Chair, I didn't phrase the question very well, but I guess what I was trying to get at is, if this is going to be a built-in capability in all of their equipment, then obviously that'll just be part of the price. The question is, do they contemplate offering this just as an option? And if it's an option, would it be at a significantly higher cost than if you didn't opt for that possibility?
Well, that would be a good question.
Mr. Stolgard.
I'm sorry. I'm sure that would be a good question for our state officials to ask the vendors. I'd be interested in knowing the answer to that.
So would I, Madam Chair. I thought that our state officials were going to ask that question, but apparently they haven't.
Well, Mr. Stolgard, in regards to your comment that state officials should ask that question, we're essentially going to mandate it before we have the answer with this language. So how in your view do we ask the question and before we essentially mandate it with unknown results?
Well, once again, Representative
Mr. Stolgard,
We're not talking about a major change. We're talking about a minor firmware change. We're not talking about any kind of retooling or of the manufacturing process. It's code that's on a chip or a CD. The capability's already been developed by our vendors for other jurisdictions. We may not end up using the same machines that they're using, but the fact that they've already developed this capability means that a lot of their investment has already happened. Again, if we were to ask the question, what does overvote protection cost? We don't have an answer to that question. Do we know if we can afford overvote protection? We don't know because we don't. The prices aren't broken out that way.
Mr. Stolgard, how many cities in Minnesota have expressed interest? I know that we just talked about we were going to write a change in statute for one city last year, or at least that was a proposal. But how many cities have expressed interest in this, not just light interest, but significant interest?
Sure. Historically, looking back, we should note that the state of Minnesota used instant runoff voting very, very briefly about 90 years ago. And Yes.
Yes.
And then in the city of Hopkins used rank ballot voting for about a dozen years or so in the 50s. Interestingly enough, Hopkins is probably the most serious city about going back to that method. There are no active charter amendment campaigns going on that I'm aware of, but several cities. The issue is very new on the horizon, and it's really just something that's coming to the attention of Minnesotans. So a lot of people have no idea what this is. I mean, it's that new to people. Even people and members of the legislature, people who are really savvy in the realm of politics, it's brand new to many people. So I don't think you can evaluate it on the basis of how many cities are actively considering it, because it's an issue that's on the ascending point in the curve.
Mr. Solgard, can you then tell me, I'm sorry, Mr. Kennedy, did you have a comment to make?
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. In Ramsey County recently, a commissioner resigned, and they had to hold a special election to replace the commissioner, and so they had more than two candidates. They had a primary, and then a month later they had another election. Each election cost approximately $50,000 to the county. I believe Mr. Mansky from Ramsey County can confirm those numbers, but the turnout for the primary was something like 4%, and for the ultimate election was like 6 or 7%. Now, this would have been a perfect opportunity to use ranked voting to replace somebody who resigned and basically to fill the office for a temporary measure for a couple years, and to just allow voters to come out one time and rank their choices, and instead of making them come out in the winter to make one vote and then make them come back a month later, make another vote. And consequently, the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners passed a resolution supporting legislation that would authorize them to use ranked voting.
And I'm sure that the Ramsey County Director of Elections is here today.
Mr. Solgard, Representative Emmer.
I just have a question on that point, because school boards and city councils, in my experience, when they are replacing a recently vacated seat for whatever reason, they have a choice. They can run a special election. They can choose how they run that depending on the cost. Or they can appoint. That's not the same for commissioners, I take it?
Mr. Kennedy?
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, I believe if the term is more than a year and a half or 2 years, then they have to have a special election.
Okay. I think that's correct.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming forward. All right. Anybody else wish to testify on Section 16? Mr. Dreher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Jim Gerard. I'm with Cook Hill Gerard, and I'm representing ES&S. Maybe I have more questions than I have answers, and these fellows might know more about what's available than I do right now. However, the only thing I would caution you on is currently we essentially supply two different systems possibly to the state of Minnesota. One is a ballot marking machine, the AutoMark, which can be programmed to pretty much mark any ballot, whether it would be a ranked order ballot or whatever. I think the issue would be the optical scan machines that would count the votes. And both of these systems are currently going through the federal certification process, which they started in January. The certification process includes not only the machine and how the machine works, but it includes the firmware, the software that runs the machine, marks the ballot or counts the ballots when it's over. And all of that is going through the certification It has made it through the first two steps of that process as of May 11th. So it's a long, tough testing process. The issue or the question I would have that I frankly don't know the answer to, but I do know the answer. They are not testing these machines to do ranked order voting. They are testing the machines for federal elections, and the state will accept at least a good portion of that certification for voting here, I would assume. I don't believe, and I think the question that you have to deal with is, you could use the same software for a federal, during a federal election that would do the ranked order voting, because it's simply not going to be certified, and it would have to go through the federal certification process. So if you're running a federal election at the same time you're running a local election that has ranked order voting, the software to do the ranked order voting wouldn't be federally certified, as I understand it. So I think that's the question you have to deal with here. And I can't, also don't know the difference in the price between the machines. That they don't trust lobbyists with price lists and things like that. So I can't tell you the difference in price between an optical scan machine that's able to tabulate ranked order voting and one that is not. I'm sure the cheaper ones that are used probably, which is, I think the M100 is used at the precinct level in Minnesota, probably is not widely used. Is probably not one that currently has the code necessary to do instant runoff voting. So, I think I have probably brought more questions than I have answers. But there is a concern with our folks about the federal certification issues and instant runoff voting.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Senator Martin.
Madam Chair, Mr. Girard, this legislation, the way I understand what their intent is to that the state should, in setting up a contract for purchasing, this would be that the vendor would agree to provide firmware, software, whatever, to make this happen. If at some point in the future this was authorized, not unless then. I assume that the federal certification isn't a one-time thing, and that we could, in effect, put in language saying that if it's federally certified and in effect, if the state is going to pass instant runoff voting, we're going to pass it sometime in the future for, say, cities or school districts, that we could make sure, even if it wasn't the same time as federal elections, we may want to make sure it's certified by that anyhow, and we could just put that in the law either now or later if we were going to do that, I assume.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, you'd probably want to put some kind of language in tying it to federal certification. I think that's what you're getting at, and I presume you'd probably want to do that. Otherwise, you'd be using two different systems for local elections and federal elections that hit federal.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, Mr. Girard, if there are entities in the U.S. that are using ranked voting now, we wouldn't be the only people asking for this machinery to be capable of doing the ranked order voting. So do you know whether this is one of the things that the federal elections, wherever the hell they are, Federal Election Assistance Commission, seek? whether this is one of the things they're looking at? I know they're going through some turmoil out there, but it's your drive.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, there are very few people that know what they're looking at right now, I think.
Point taken.
And there are probably folks, I think most of the companies that are working on the election systems also have people working with NIST and some of the people who are setting the standards. So I'm sure they know a lot more than most of us out here know, but those have not all been finalized yet, and I'm not sure where they're at.
Any further? Mr. Gerard, do you know how many entities are using ranked order voting or IRV?
Madam Chair, I don't. I know it was, I believe it was tried in some precincts in San Francisco last year. It's probably the only place I've really heard of it, but I'm sure there are others. I'm not familiar with it. It's just, it's a difficult process to count depending on the kind of system you have. A ballot system with a ballot counter is a fairly complicated system.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Gerard.
Thank you.
We're still on Section 16, and I think Representative Hilty, you had some further questions regarding the Commissioner of Administration, some comments on that section, and I'm going to step out for just a moment.
Mr. Black or whoever from the Secretary's office would want to address this. I think the questions that we had regarding paragraphs A and B in Section 16 were about the role of the Department of Administration in the process. This refers both to consultation in paragraph A about contracts and paragraph B. The question that I had raised earlier was what might be an acceptable or contemplated role for the Department of Administration. Not only in the contractual arrangements, but also in the technical arrangements. And one question that I wanted to raise in particular is that we're becoming more and more aware nationwide and certainly within the state of Minnesota about system security issues. And I was wondering if the Office of the Secretary saw any role for the Chief Information Officer to consulting capacity to address some of the security issues that would be involved with the Secretary's systems. Not just this voting system, and I don't know how far we want to go with the voting system, but we're certainly aware that the voter registration system is integrated with a number of other state systems, with the Department of Vehicle Services, the Division of Vehicle Services, with the Department of Health, with the Judiciary. There may be others that I'm not... Has there been any discussion about security issues and whether that would involve the Chief Information Officer?
Mr. Olte, Mr. Director Control, the Secretary of State's Office, I guess. We, as you know, recently there's been some discussion in the newspapers or media regarding security systems of websites. And our office has been in contact with the governor's office and the other website administrators and computer system administrators. And at this point, because we have such sensitive data on our website, we have quite an extensive security system apparatus that we use now. And we have been asked to consult reverse consult, in fact, with the other agencies on our security system. And we will be utilizing the current in-house expertise that we have right now on our state database. Our IT director will be involved in this
in the writing of the request for proposal and also in writing the requirements for the, for that RFP, and it will contain a security component. Having said that, we are in contact with the Department of Administration, with the individuals that have expertise in writing national contracts, and in particular those individuals in administration that have been involved in writing contracts for an association of Western 13 states that have gone together and have combined. So they basically will be sharing expertise, and this is one of the issues that we'll be addressing. So specifically, we have asked the CIO to participate or be a part of this, but the Department of Administration is an integral and an extensive part of the process right now and would be in the RFP.
Mr. Bryan. Mr. Chairman, I just want to add that there's also, in addition to the Western States Purchasing Alliance, I think is the...
Yes.
There's also NASPO, which is the National State Purchasing Offices, and we have discussed that using that mechanism as well. Certainly the CIO has, or their expert staff, have skill sets that certainly we have our own staff who have similar skill sets, but they have skill sets and viewpoints that would be useful in this process. I think we're the advisory committee portion of that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Quintella.
We will welcome their participation and their assistance from the CIO or the staff from that office.
Deputy Cantara, I guess the question boils down to, does the language that we have in these two sections, or these two paragraphs of Section 16 that we're considering, work for you, or do we need to modify that in some way to clarify the roles?
Mr. Chair, I believe we earlier had Mr. Black went through the sections that we would recommend they be modified. And you want to go through those again?
Mr. Chair, I think if you take in line 6.35, if you were to delete in cooperation and instead substitute with the assistance of, and then down below in 7.20, if you would add Secretary of State and Commissioner of Administration. Is that 7.20 instead of Commissioner of Administration. Put in Secretary of State. Well, I just change the language.
Right. And I was wondering, Mr. Black, when we reviewed this language earlier, if on line 7.19 might make sense, instead of saying to assist, to say consult with.
Mr. Chair, that would be a useful change. To consult, so it would be to consult with the Secretary of State. I guess you'd have to change it to, you'd have to change to review and evaluate. In reviewing and evaluating, there'd be a slight word change.
Yes.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, that's a slightly different. We also had the issue about the open appointments, but that's a slightly different.
Senator Higgins, while you were out, we were just discussing the language in these two paragraphs of Section 16. I wanted to clarify what the Secretary had in mind, particularly with regard to security and how that would involve the chief information officer. And I'd like to make clear about that, that we've had this discussion, the same sort of discussion in a number of contexts, and I think that there's kind of a general consensus in, among legislators at this point that it's dangerous to have all of the decisions about something being made by one person or one office, no matter how competent they may be. I think that kind of explains what happened in the Department of Public Safety. So I personally, at least, I have a great deal of concern that when decisions like this are made, certainly, you know, the secretary should have the authority to make them, but I think that it would be very prudent to invite as much expert advice from someone who has a totally different perspective as you can get. And I hope you agree to that.
Mr. Chair, we're in full agreement with you.
Mr. Bryan.
Mr. Chair, you might want to add on line 7.19, perhaps, or let's see, to the advisory committee, perhaps the CIO or the, I guess, whatever they're going to be called now, should be invited to be part of the advisory committee specifically as well, or their designee.
Yes, thank you. I think that's a good suggestion. Senator Higgins, did you?
We have add CIO on there. So,
other members have questions?
Mr. Chair, what were you doing up on 6.30, 4, 5, and 6 with the cooperation and consultation and all of that?
Senator Higgins, I believe the suggestion from Mr. Black was that on line 6.35, they would appreciate the change instead of saying in cooperation with, it would read, we would delete in cooperation with and add with the assistance of.
And Mr. Chair, I think that reflects perhaps what you said, which is that decisions need to be made not only in one office or by one person, but decisions do need to be made. And so the secretary would make the decision, but the commissioner of administration would be clearly be involved very closely in that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Black, does the Secretary of State use the expertise of the Department of Admin in your purchasing?
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, yes, actually we have used them in respect to the state contract for voting systems that we have now. Okay. We work through Mr. Stembler and his fine crew over there. We already have a relationship.
If there are no other questions at this time on these, on this, or at least these two paragraphs of this section, I'm going to turn the chair back over to
Senator Higgins, I guess one further thing I want to discuss, I think we're pretty well done with Section 16, is that there's an issue in between the House and the Senate that is pretty consistent through the bill. In the House language, we're very descriptive of a permanent paper record or paper ballot, whereas in the Senate language, it's described once in the definitions and then referenced throughout. And Representative Hilty has some comments regarding that, and then I also would like Ms. McKnight to give her viewpoint on whether we should just reference or whether we should use those clarifying language throughout, and then maybe Mr. Watson has some comments in that regard. Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question did arise, and I was not present at the beginning of the discussion that you had earlier, so I don't know what we've concluded about this, but...
we concluded that we were going to hear from you before we made any...
All right. Well, one of the changes that I think it was recognized and generally agreed upon was the question of substituting language polling in place for precinct in virtually every place that the word precinct appears. The somewhat obvious rationale for that is that many precincts have more than one polling place, and if we're allowing...
We do that one. We have no complaints okay. about the polling place in, as opposed to precincts.
Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are some minor language changes. Other than that, I think one of the major ones, however, was the question of the discrete paper record, and I think that that's a stylistic question that that we have. My feeling about that, I appreciate Mr. Watson's concerns about drafting style, but I think that that appears in sufficiently different contexts that it would just add to the clarity considerably if we did, in fact, repeat that. Even though it might not entirely be necessary.
Ms. McKnight, do you have any comments on your viewpoint? And then I'll be asking Mr. Watson the same question. Whether it's necessary to repeat it for clarification or whether a reference to a definition is sufficient.
Well, Madam Chair, I had some conversations with Mr. Watson and other staff people, and I appreciate the point that if the concepts are in the definitions, they carry through. On the other hand, I also see the benefit of some comfort language in some places, and having looked at some revisions, Mr. Watson suggested that there aren't too many more places. I haven't had a chance to go over this with Representative Hilty yet, but Mr. Black and I went over it and found just a few places where we might add a securely in front of transmitted and a few things of that nature that would be, you know, recognizing Representative Hilty is very interested in this issue, you have to look at that, but I don't think there'd be too many more changes.
Mr. Watson, do you have any comments in that regard?
Madam Chair, my concern as a drafter is that we are advised to try to keep substantive law out of definitions, and also as a general principle to try to state the substantive policy once and not state the same thing several times at risk of saying it differently some of the times that you are repeating it. The substantive place in this bill where the requirements are imposed is on page 6, just above the voting systems contract language. On lines 6.16 to 6.32. And in our discussions of the many other places where the same phrase appears, we have seen a need to change these substantive requirements to make sure we get all the requirements in right here where it really matters. And in a moment I can just point out what those changes are. But that just highlights the benefit of saying it once and saying it right and making sure you got it right in that one place. The count of places where the same phrase needs to appear is 7. There's one here and there are 6 other places where it could be repeated. In our discussions earlier between Ms. McKnight and Mr. Black and I have conceded I have rolled over on putting securely and in the precinct in all 6 of those other places, in a polling place, in all 6 of those other places, but I have held out for not having to speak this language.
Well, Mr. Walker.
A machine creating an individual discrete permanent paper record of the votes on the ballot. It just was.
Can you say it by memory?
I thought I was proposing a reasonable compromise.
Well, Mr. Watson, thank you for your acrobatics. I appreciate that. Other than violating codes of drafting and proper drafting, so your concern, if I'm hearing you correctly, is just making sure that the language is exactly the same and crossovers and any inconsistencies, excuse me, easy for me to say, that there may be that could pose some problems if not caught.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Hilty, do you... I recognize you probably don't have the codes of drafting probably as close to your heart as Mr. Watson.
Quite possibly not.
Do you, in your view, if there's a clear reference to a distinctly defined section, is there any satisfaction we can give you without having the seven?
Well, Madam Chair, I think as long as we do have the compromise that was referenced by Mr. Watson and the assurance of counsel that, in fact, the definition will suffice to make clear what's intended here, I think I can probably live with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative Hilty. I do appreciate your willingness to compromise as well. I guess what I'd like to do now is... yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Watson.
If we could, Madam Chair, while we're on the point, to go to that substantive area on page 6 and point out the places where changes are needed. And that would be on line 6.18, delete a permanent and insert an individual discrete permanent. On line 6.24, delete precinct and insert polling place. On line 6.27, delete precinct and insert polling place. On line 6.30, delete precinct or at a counting center and insert polling place. Then on line 6.32, delete all the votes and insert each vote.
Mr. Watson, are there other... I seem to recall that there's other places throughout then that we've changed polling place and
yes.
And a number of different places. So I think if we write those things down, we can maybe get all the pieces pulled together before we actually move something along.
Okay.
Manager.
Yes, Senator Higgins.
Sometimes... we're allowed to just ask counsel to go through and correct all of those without us having to trust ourselves to try to find.
That would be satisfactory. Ms. McKnight, can you work with Mr. Watson on getting all those changes pulled together? And then I guess the next steps we could do a variety of different things, but the first thing that I'd like, Senator, your consideration on are the items of identical language within both of our bills, and maybe we could do some moving of those items to get them off the table.
Okay, Madam Chair, and this afternoon when you and I talked, we also kind of did a tentative... decision on Senator House language when they were very similar. May I offer those as well?
Senator Higgins, if we could start with the identical,
okay.
And then let's back up the other direction.
All right. Madam Chair, the first identical is on page R2, section 66 in the House, and section 6 in the Senate. Those provisions are identical.
Senator Higgins moves... Section 6 and Section 7. Is that correct, Senator Higgins?
No, just 6.
I'm sorry, Section 6. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed.
Madam Chair, on the bottom of that page, Section 68 of the House and Section 10 of the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins moves Section 68 of the House, Section 10 of the second of the Senate. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passed.
Madam Chair, on R3, Sections 73 and 74 in the House, 11 and 12 in the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins moves the adoption of Section 73 and 74 in the House, Section 11 and 12 in the Senate. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, on the bottom of that page is a House-only provision. The Senate would take that provision.
Senator Higgins moves Section 75 of the House provision. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And to the top of R4, that Section 76 of the House is in the State Government Finance Bill, and so we don't need it in this bill.
Senator Higgins moves the deletion of Section 76 on the House language.
You don't need to stop it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Section 78 in the House, Section 13 in the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins moves Section 78, the adoption of Section 78 in the House, Section 13 in the Senate. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the Senate would offer the House language on the top of R5. That's giving us more than 3 minutes to vote.
Senator Higgins moves the adoption of Section 80 on the House side. And please forgive me, I did not offer discussion on those previous motions. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Hear me there. Okay. Madam Chair, on the bottom of R7, Section 84 of the House and 18 of the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins moves Section 84 on the House language, Section 18 on the Senate language. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
That thing on the top of R8. Madam Chair, on R9, on the House side, Sections 87, 88, and 89 are identical to House provisions, Section 20, 21, and 22.
Senator Higgins moves Section 87, 88, and 89 identical to provisions Section 20, 21, and 22 in the Senate. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, on the top of R10, Representative Hilty said the Senate language was updated and should be recommended.
Senator Higgins moves the adoption of Section 23 of the Senate language. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the bottom of that same page, Section 91, there's a adding the words at a counting center in there. The Senate will offer the House provision.
Senator Higgins offers the adoption of Section 91 of the House provision. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails.
Madam Chair, on R11, Sections 92 in the House and 24 in the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins offers Section 92 and 94 in the House, identical to Sections 24 and 25 in the Senate language. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Section 94, we're just going to put a big X through. Section 94 of the House and Section 25 of the Senate are identical.
Senator Higgins, I believe that I moved both of those.
You already moved.
You moved both of those, and we adopted both Section 94 and 25.
You did already?
Did I add both?
You said them both.
You said both,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's...
We did 92 and 94 together?
Yeah.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're good. Okay. Section 95, starting on the bottom of R11, is like, and continuing on to the next page, is identical to Section 28 of the Senate. Excuse me, Section 26 of the Senate.
Senator Higgins moves House Section 95, identical to Senate Section 26. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair, Section 97 of the House is identical to Section 28 of the Senate. Did I say that wrong? Section 97 of the House is identical to Section 28 of the Senate.
That's
correct. Senator Higgins moves Section 97 of the House language identical to Section 28 of the Senate language. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins, are you going to move the House language in the next section? Is that what you're doing?
No. Madam Chair, on the bottom of R14, the local equipment plans are the same except that the Senate included the school district election officials, and I would like to move the Senate position on that.
Senator Higgins moves the Senate position, Section 30. Any discussion?
Madam Chair,
Representative Hilty.
I believe that the school districts are very much in favor of this. That's my understanding.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. I, too, am in support of that provision and would encourage adoption. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair, on the last page, R15, Section 31 of the Senate, saying that nothing is intended to preclude the use of mail balloting in the precincts where it's already allowed. I would like to move the Senate section of that, as well as the effective date. What the heck?
Senator Higgins moves Section 31 and 32 on the Senate language. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, as much as I have reservations about the use of mail balloting at all, I believe that this is a necessary provision.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. And it's also my understanding that that was in the House bill before an amendment that was put on and inadvertently was taken off. So we are essentially putting the House position back in place and would encourage adoption. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then I'm sure we've got some very similars. Would you like me to try to wade through a few of those?
Yes, I think let's walk through a few of them. We do have to be cognizant of the time. We're obligated to be out of here by 10 o'clock, which I know everybody will be unhappy with. Unless you want to vote to stay longer, we certainly can do that. But knowing everybody's schedules, I certainly would propose that we actually do get out of here before that time.
All right. Okay, so going back to page 1 again, R1, Madam Chair, Section 1 and Section 1, the Senate is in an active voice, the House is in a passive voice, and I'm an English major and an editor, and so I move the Senate active voice.
Senator Higgins moves Section 1 of the Senate language. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I would concur with that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, in Section 70 of the House and Section 2 of the Senate, the House says we select votes. In the Senate, we say we cast votes. And I would move the Senate version to cast votes. That's the only change in those.
Senator Higgins moves Section 2 of the Senate language. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm sure recall that we had this discussion, and I think we all agree that cast is a preferable term.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, in the next section, 72 and 3, this is the first of several, or the seven, places where the House talks about individual discrete paper ballot, da-da-da-da-da. And so I would like to move the Senate language with the following changes. On lines 2.4, before transmit, insert the word securely. And at the end of the sentence, at 2.5, insert the phrase in the polling place. So it would say to securely transmit a ballot electronically to automatic tabulating equipment in the polling place.
Senator Higgins moves section 3 of the Senate language with these changes. After 2, securely, add securely. After the end of the sentence, before the period, add in the polling place. Is that correct, Ms. McKnight?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Hilty.
Senator Higgins, this section is a definition. So while I did agree that we didn't need to have that discrete paper record in every place that it could possibly occur, I believe that there is some significance in having it here, since this is what, in fact, defines the machine. It says an audio ballot reader, etc. I mean, we're talking about a definition here. So maybe council could advise me on this. If that's wrong, that's fine. I certainly concur with the other language, but isn't this a definition?
Mr. Watson?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, it is a definition. That's where I said that that's kind of repeating. The substantive law shouldn't be included. In addition, if you take a look at the definition that we're talking about here, we're talking about reading from something and then transmitting it someplace, and the requirement that a machine that takes a vote has to produce that individual, discrete, permanent paper record really more applies to the other parts of the machine, not just this reading part, I would argue.
Representative Hilty?
Well, Madam Chair, I think this is more complex than that. If we don't have the definition that's in the House language in this section, and we're saying that it's possible to transmit a ballot electronically without any definition of what that means,
Mr.
Madam Chair, my preference with this section would be to adopt the House language with the change that Senator Higgins suggested regarding the polling place.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. Mr. Black, did you have some comments?
Madam Chair, just a suggestion that perhaps somewhere in towards the end of this section we can use the cross-reference to section 15, which is 206.80, something to the effect of transmit a ballot to automatic tabulating equipment in the polling place, either in compliance with or pursuant to section 206.80. Is that a possibility? Perhaps council can.
Madam Chair, why don't we hold this section aside and we'll think about it when we have fresh brains, and maybe council can do that checking for us.
The chair will lay the motion to adopt section 3 of the Senate language on the table.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I could just add before we leave that, I think this is a really clear instance of the difference between having as few words as possible and having clarity. If someone reads this portion of the statute and they're simply referred to some other section that says pursuant to section 16 whatever, I don't think that is as easily understood as if those few more words are just included right there.
And Mr. Black, could you come up one more time? I wanted to maybe just touch base again. We had talked a little bit about earlier about automatic tabulating equipment versus optical scan machine, and the choice of those two terms, one being better than the other.
Madam Chair and members, as it turns out, with some of the automatic tabulating equipment includes both the optical scan machines that are used with the auto mark, which actually creates a ballot, where the ballot is actually inserted. However, in the other, in at least one other configuration, there is no actual ballot created. And what happens is the vote is actually electronically sent to the chip or prom pack of the optical scan machine, but it's not actually optically scanned. So it's not, in order to properly define that, you don't really want to use the word optical scan, because then you've taken out that other machine, and there is automatic tabulating equipment is used in many places. We don't want to exclude the other kinds of equipment as long as they produce the discrete permanent paper record that Representative Hilty is pursuing.
All right. So, Madam Chair, on Section 68, House and 4 of the Senate, I'll move the Senate provision. For all the reasons that Mr. Black just said, related to optically scan, I think that's the only difference in that section.
Madam Chair, where?
Section 64 of the House, Section 4 of the Senate. The only change, the only difference is that the House talks about the equipment includes machines and stuff necessarily to optically scan, comma, automatically examine and count, da-da. And the Senate does not. And Mr. Black just told us why some machines don't optically scan when they send it from one side to the other, so we should use the Senate language.
Senator Higgins, would it be possible to just delay that until we can adopt the two together? Because they do seem to blend together in deciding, depending on how we decide the language of one, it certainly could affect the other. Would that be satisfactory to you to just hold off on that one?
Sure. Okay, Madam Chair, House Section 65 and Senate Section 5 are different only in the end of the sentence that talks about the discrete individual paper record. And this is a definition of a ballot. And I think this is a place where that phraseology is not necessary. So I would move the Senate side.
Senator Higgins, move Section 5 of the Senate language. Is there any discussion? Representative Hilty?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's all right.
Well, you're missing the securely and then the discrete paper record of each vote.
We'd already reached agreement that securely would be added in front of transmitted wherever that word occurs, I believe.
Okay.
And that's important. And then the discrete paper record of each
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
Representative Hilty and Mr. Watson reminded me. So I would actually like to move that Senate language with the following additions. On line 2.19, insert securely before the word transmitted. And on 2.20, at the end of the sentence, include in the polling place.
Ms. McKnight?
And at a very micro level, could the semicolons be changed to commas throughout?
Please do.
And I didn't major in English.
I did, and I didn't catch it, so thank you.
Senator Higgins, we should make those changes. I'm starting to sense that we're jumping ahead of council, and if we can get them to, we can probably get securely transmitted done throughout with one motion.
In the polling places in one motion.
Maybe that's a motion that's made the next time we meet in one amendment, or we can just move it.
We can actually just direct staff to do it.
Okay.
You have to move it.
Maybe staff can help me out then in terms of process. When we do that, do we need to make that same change, Ms. McKnight, every time we adopt language then? It would seem to me that that would be redundant.
Madam Chair, if you did that, the motion that you're talking about to insert securely before transmitted throughout, to my mind, would need to redo that.
Okay.
And Mr.
Watson's
not.
Okay.
Okay.
Super.
We're in agreement.
Madam Chair,
I
think that we should hold off on this. There's more difference in this section than we have explored so far.
Okay, we'll hold this then. All right. Well, it would appear to me that we are actually coming on upon the hour that we have some time, but I think we're probably going to get bogged down in some of these more detailed items. And so, Senator Higgins, I guess maybe what I'd like to do is see if you, if we're going to get out of here before 10, if you have a roadmap for your thoughts the next time we were to meet.
Madam Chair, I know that on the Senate side, we're not very eager to come to work tomorrow, and I suspect maybe the House might think that as well. But I also know that if we're going to get all our work done collectively as a legislature on Monday as much as we can, we need to get our final product to the reviser fairly early in the day. So I would suggest that we meet at 7:30 on Monday morning and see if we can wrap this up and...
By 8.
yeah. Senator Clyde wants this to be done by 8. So. is that acceptable to members of the House, 7:30 on Monday morning?
That would be absolutely acceptable. We would like to get it going. And Senator Higgins, I assume that you'll send out a notice then and let us know where we would be meeting, and or we're happy to host you here over in the state office building too.
We will find a room somewhere in the Capitol, and we'll send out a official notice. I don't know how that's done. It's not my job, but Carl will take care of it. And we will try to work rapidly on Monday morning and see if we can wrap this up.
Well, there are some very, very big differences that we'll have to address on Monday morning. I think we walked through some of the controversy here today with Section 16, really. But also, aside from Section 16, we haven't even gotten down to the nuts and bolts, which is how the dollars are to be appropriated, which is, I think, where the largest differences lie. Senator Higgins, we'll be needing to make sure that we definitely have all of the technical aspects, and so I hope that Ms. McKnight and Mr. Watson can touch base as well and get some of the technical aspects of what we've already talked about moved along, so that we can kind of get down to the dollars.
It's okay with the Senate. We'll collect the members and we'll bring them.
Sure, and we. staff is telling me too that we'll just hang on to everything and bring it along with us. If you're comfortable with that, otherwise you can take it with you. Whatever you guys want to do is fine.
I'll take mine with me.
Any further questions or comments?
Do people want me to call them? Well, we still won't know until. Will we know tomorrow what room we have?
More than likely it'll be either room 224 or room like it. But that might be a good place for me to put up a sign because staff won't be in on Sunday. I mean, we might, but the sergeant's office and the security will not.
Senator Higgins, can you call me? Yes. And I can call my conferees and we can make sure that we get everybody there from our side in the right spot. So, you know, we have trouble with the Capitol the way it is, wandering around aimlessly, so that would be helpful.
It's likely we'll be over in the Supreme Court room somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will do our best to try to get people information. And if nothing else, we'll hang signs at our office and wherever else we can find. But if I could have cell phone numbers from Representative Emmer and Representative Hilty, I think I'll have the whole collection then.
Representative Hilty, do you have a question? Any further questions?
No.
Mr. Watson.
A question about notice. Your committee administrator or Mr. Hadley, do you have a listserv that the people here could sign up for so that they could get a notice?
We have one, don't we, Carl?
I believe we can develop one, yes.
Certainly. How would people then get on the list, or where should they go?
I believe if they email it to me, I can put my name down here, and then people can email it to me tomorrow, and we can get that set up, and I'll take care of
it. Sure.
We could do that, too.
Yeah, well, just give them email them also.
If you'd like to leave your email address with Mr. Hadelin tonight, we'll make sure that we get the notice of location. But it will be at 7:30 then, if I'm hearing the Senator correctly, 7:30 on Monday. And we have a lot of work to do. Any further comments? With that, the meeting is adjourned.